Hello, it's Annie here, back with another edition of Changes Focus. This new version of Changes is us being able to look back at such a huge amount of amazing conversations and zoom in on one theme and then bring you all the different guests' take on that theme. So last week we did education and we had some amazing people speaking about their schooling experiences. This week we focus on a theme that comes up again and again when people are asked about the big changes in their lives, and that is parenting. Now, of course, not all of us want to be parents or choose to be parents or are able to be parents, but we have all been parented in some way. It is a universal theme. And you will hear from author Zadie Smith, my husband, T, discussing parenting when you have ADHD, and comedians Jen Brister and Josh Widdicombe, who get into discussing porn with children and what not to expect when your partner is in labour. So let's begin with Zadie Smith, one of the most exalted authors in the world today. Now, Zadie, when asked what the biggest change was in her adult life, said it was having children. I loved what she said, particularly about freedom, and people still come up to me and talk to me about this episode. I asked Zadie, how did having children change you?
I feel like when I was younger, sometimes I would wake up at 11. I remember that.
I had my mouth full of water there.
I spat it. That out. Did sometimes happen. And I do, I was remembering recently, actually reading your book, that I did spend a lot of weekends going back into Soho or Dalston to pick up a credit card that I'd left before, or some sunglasses or a phone. And life was just like this endless rolling chaos. I had no domestic existence. Like, I didn't know how to cook. I was not clean. It was just that kind of life. There was no order to it, no structure at all. And then kids changed all that, and also made time so valuable to me.
Yes.
So that's the main thing. When I first had my first child, I didn't really realise I'd had a child for a long time. I think it was 3 or 4 years before.
Well, they're babies. They're not
children. Yeah, they're not children.
So the baby still phase something, is easier. Yeah.
It's still something you think you can manage. Like, it's a part of your lifestyle, as horrific as that sounds. And so it took a while to realise that this isn't just a matter of managing a being. This is like an enormous relational thing that will last your entire life.
So how did you adapt to the domestic? I mean, I know that's a very long, slow process. You don't immediately start, you know, but it is.
With great resistance originally. And, you know, my mind is completely transformed on these things. I realised that, you know, I never wanted children when I was a child. I never wanted children as a young woman. I never wanted to be married. I never wanted to be domesticated. I never wanted to have a house.
Wanted to be married.
No one any of it. I just wanted to live in a one-bedroom flat in a big city, write books, and be left alone. That was my only plan in life. Didn't want any of it. And then what I really realized about some of my ideas of freedom is that they were completely, they're like neoliberal fantasies. Like, basically, it's like, let me choose everything. Leave me alone all the time. Don't put any demands on me. Only I will make demands. It's a dark vision. And it really took me a long time to understand that things that I've been taught by the 80s, basically by the capitalist 80s, to believe were unfreedom, are freedom.
Yeah.
Like, having people who mean something to you, who you have duties towards, is not unfreedom. It is freedom. It's actual existence. It really took me, like, Nick is a completely different person who understood that from birth, probably. It took me a really long time. To be free of meaning is not freedom. Like, now my life is full of meanings. Sometimes they're difficult, sometimes they're painful, but it's absolutely full. I don't think children are the only route to that kind of meaning, but I absolutely think you have to find something other than yourself to focus on. Me and a lot of other lady writers I know, when we first had children, we spent our whole time, you know, talking about how we were somehow trapped or imprisoned, but that's the most superficial idea of what a relation with other people is like. You know, now I consider all my relations, my friends, my dog, my husband, my family, as things that liberate me from myself. Like, they are absolute freedom to me, and without them I would just be completely lust, but I see it in, you know, a dog can do this for you, a cat can do this for you, going down to the larder and volunteering can do this for you. It just, you just need to be among other people at some point, because otherwise it really is, it's hard. It's hard to find in yourself, or for me anyway, a reason to go on.
I'm thinking of one of the very last scenes in The Fraud, when Eliza Touche, the main character from the book, is confronted with the death of another main character. We won't spoil it for people. And she has an internal kind of dialogue about her life and her freedom. It's really beautiful. It just talks about how all she wants to do is be free.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, I guess you're...
It's a like, question of what is that freedom
What
involve?
Is the freedom?
Like, I really noticed it with the children thing is that, at least in my own case, you spend so long battling to try and retain your own space and getting babies. And then sometimes when you look at what you've battled for, it isn't very much. And these children are about to grow and disappear so quickly that you're going to get what you want sooner than you can imagine. So all of these things are so out of sync with our discourse, our capitalist discourse, which is about you do you, get what you want. And so when it comes into conflict with this other thing, I guess we have in our heads this thing like, have I become some kind of, you know, a Victorian or some old-fashioned person who is domesticated as a traditional woman? And we fight against that as if there's no liberating version of being connected to other people. Mm. And that is the triumph of capitalism. It convinces you that it's just you and the shops, it's just you and the phone, and that's all that there is. Whereas there is an older vision of like solidarity between people, within families, between children, between men and men, women and women, men and women, like a community that is freeing. It's not a trap. It's like the only thing that brings joy.
The way that we approach parenting is such an incredibly personal and individual experience. My first rule of parenting is that no one else cares about your kids, and you should never judge another parent. There's no right or wrong way of doing it. And this is something my husband, Tom, otherwise known as music producer Toddler T, and I discussed in the context of Tom having an adult diagnosis of ADHD and how that affected his parenting.
I guess it's like, I don't think I'm particularly conservative in terms of the way I look at young people and the way I feel like they should flourish. Like people, even our kids, 6 and 10, I learn off them every day. And I feel so that they should grow their way, not necessarily in the box of the education system or society that puts them in. And I feel it just verifies that a bit more. So what I'm trying to say is like, because of the way I am around people and particularly young people, I think it just encourages me even further with our kids and the young people I work with in here and the kids I do little community work with and other, to just be like as out the box as you feel so you need to be.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Am I making sense?
Yeah. So it's kind of like, don't feel like you have to follow the rules of society puts on you.
Literally.
Like you don't put any cash on school, really. I know, like for you, it's because you had a shit time at school.
Mm.
So your thing with school is just like, I just want them to know how to live in the world
literally.
As opposed to be great at history.
Yeah, literally. And that's always been my mantra anyway. But I feel so like this has just verified that, because the box that education is in is just it's a part of society and it can get you into university and all that, and I understand that, and that's great if it works for you, but there's loads of other boxes in the world, you know.
Mm.
And a lot of people that are not meant to fit in that box because their brain wasn't that wired that way, like, don't have to.
Yeah,
that's my point, I guess. Mm. But like with my kids and that, it's like I see traits of myself in both of them, of course, but for me it's more as a parent, it's like, just have to be so disciplined with myself and just like remind myself all the time to focus. Because that to me, I think as a parent, I don't know about you, Annie, but the main thing I want my kids to be when they're older is not fucked up.
How do you mean? Describe fucked up.
Well, basically we're human beings, right? We're sensitive things, we're dynamic, we're great, we're horrible, we're left, we're right, we're up, down and all that. And it's so hard to mold a human being into an adult and not put anything you've got on you on them.
Yeah.
And it's bloody impossible, actually.
Yeah, it is.
And so it's a full-time effort. They talk about trauma and generations and breaking cycles and things like that in certain places and communities and stuff like that. I'm not necessarily talking about that, but what I'm talking about is like how my lack of attention in the house could affect them as young people and thus for an adult.
Okay.
You understand?
And when you say your lack of attention, what do you mean?
Like just being like not fully, not there in the room sometimes, or like being distracted or being on my phone, or all these things that I know on paper doesn't make this child flourish. Is that the right word? Mm-hmm. As much as they could. And I know that on paper, but putting it into practice is a whole different thing. I'm a human being. I'm contradictory
yeah.
as anyone else.
Yeah.
But I'm always mindful of that. And just trying to work on that bit, just like be more in the room with the youths.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
One of the big anxieties that come up when discussing parenting of young children, in particular young boys, is the conversation around porn, especially when it is so accessible now with kids having smartphones. Comedian Jen Brister has twin boys who she had with her partner Chloe. I also have two boys, so we used some of our time on Changes to approach the dreaded subject of porn.
It is complex, and I think the only way to have these conversations with your children is to not attach any shame to it. There's too much shame attached to children's sexuality, because we conflate children's sexuality with, I don't know, something horrendous like, you know, predatory behaviour by adults on children. But children have a sexuality, and we all know that. We were all teenagers. We weren't all just thinking about, you know, quadratic equations. We were like masturbating and talking to each other about sex and doing stuff with our bodies, either to ourselves or to each other, you know. And as parents, that's really hard to reconcile. And I think there's a little bit of us that goes, well, my kids probably won't be sexually active until they're 27, you know, when actually we might find out that our children lost their virginity at 14. And then that's like, oh my God, and I haven't even spoken to them about sex. So I think we need to, Chloe and I have talked about it. We already have a conversation about where babies come from and all of that, because we've had to explain why they've got two mums. So we've had that conversation about how babies are born and how they were born and how they were conceived. And I think we will talk to them about their sexuality. We've talked to them about consent and how it's important that they know that they can say no and that their bodies are special and no one is allowed to touch their body apart from them. And I think we will get to a point where we, you know, in a year or so, where we will talk to our children and go, you're going to see things, you're going to see videos of people, you know, having sex. And you, what you need to know is that the, this isn't necessarily what sex or sexuality is. Pornography is not the same as two people in a loving relationship. So, you know, what I'm trying to say is, if you end up with a girlfriend and that is what you end up with, don't try and stick your dick in her ear, because you won't like it, you know?
Maybe it's like, it's looking at it like theatre. It's like saying to them, like, you just look at it like it's some sort of kind of exaggerated theatrical performance of that is not, I don't know, I'm still trying to figure it out.
Well, I think, you know, there's a little bit of me that wants to like put porn on the telly and go, right, sit down, we're going to go through this together. Right, you see what he's doing here?
Oh God, Jen.
You see what he's doing here? She does not like that, not in her face. Now, don't choke a woman. She's not into it. I mean, I don't look. I mean, I'm just spitballing. Oh, but the whole thing is that some of the images that boys are seeing are so horrendous, and then they think that that's what they should do to girls, and girls think that that's what they should allow boys to do. Mm. And somewhere along the line, we got to just go, this is disgusting.
Yeah.
This is absolutely disgusting. And this isn't anything to do with, this isn't sex. This is something else.
Mm.
Pornography and sex are sometimes, I think, are not even, they've now become so kind of, they're like split apart in much the same way that we used to refer to rape as sex. You know, it's like rape is rape. Rape is, well, when he, you know, because they had sex, it was like, no, rape is an act of violence. Mm. And some pornography is violent and is often about dehumanizing one somebody.
Yeah.
So, Annie, I don't have the answer, but I'm willing to like really scare the shit out of them so that they know to have that conversation. And because, you know, we have had a bit of a swing to, in the other direction post Me Too, where all we do is talk about toxic masculinity and how men are bastards.
Yeah.
So we've left this space for people like Andrew Tate to fill and go, I'm going to tell you what masculinity is. And it's like, no. So we as parents have to try to say, what are the positives of being a boy or and growing up to be a man? So many. But I tell you what isn't positive is violence against women. And that doesn't make you a strong man. It makes you a very weak, weak, weak man.
God, it's such a fucking mind.
Answers on a postcard, if anyone has any better ideas.
Jen Brister there. We talked about a lot more than just porn. If you want to hear more of that episode, obviously do go search for the Changes episode with Jen Brister. And last, but definitely not least on this Changes Focus episode, we bring you the comedian, Mr. Josh Widdicombe. Now, Josh couldn't be more qualified for this specific episode because he's also the co-host of the hugely successful Parenting Hell podcast, along with Rob Beckett. This is what Josh had to say. Can we talk about the fact that you brought Charles Dickens' Great Expectations with you in order to finally read it while your wife was having her child for the first time?
Not during the labor. I'm not a monster.
But I love the lead up. But I mean, it's such a brilliant, like, of all the books, you couldn't make the Great Expectations.
But so I just had visions of she'll be breastfeeding. Do you know what misled me? My friend said, when we had the kid, it was during the, I think it was during the Ashes or something. So, and so that it was on all night. I'd sit up and my wife would breastfeed and I'd listen to the Ashes and she'd listen to podcasts and we'd watch The Sopranos. And none of this happened. I thought it was all going to be downtime. I thought it was going to be like, I don't know, like just us on the sofa, like, I thought it was going to be like being hungover. Do you know what I mean? I thought that's what it
I mean, sometimes it feels like that. You know, if you've been drinking tequila the night before.
But
And then my other favourite bit is when you're talking about the emergency cesarean that your partner has to go through, Rose. And there's a line that made me nearly fall out of bed. When you said, all we are doing is staring at the divider, waiting for our daughter to appear. Like a high-stakes version of Argos.
It is like that. I don't know if I say that but in the book, but like I remember the blood splattering on the curtain as well.
Oh, God.
And then she's just brought up and she looked livid.
Yeah.
And there's, I mean, I've lost my phone, but there's still photos on my phone of that the midwife took of her. And it's awful, a classic kind of, but it is like Alien. Like,
it's photos
of a baby coming out
being
of a stomach.
Being lifted out of a stomach. And
being lifted out
and
of a stomach.
And like,
like
weird bodily fluids that are blue. It's so like that.
And they're so, I mean, obviously, it's, you know, in the same way you're like, is stand-up scary? I'm like, how are these people not grossed out? But obviously it's so mundane to them. The second, because we had an emergency C-section the first time, the second time, we had to have a planned C-section because they just advised it because of how the first time had gone. And they were incredibly chilled. Like, it was like they were just chatting to us. Like, they were just serving you at a shop. Or it was mad. They would just be like, you know, oh, so are you going on holiday? Or you all this. And you're like, who's looking after your other kid? You're literally like being
about to, they're about to cut your wife open. Literally, and take a living thing out of her belly.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It was so mad.
So tell me then, what else, once your first kid was born, what other preconceptions were smashed to smithereens upon real life baby
in
the world?
The sleep thing that was, now everyone knows the sleep's bad, right? Obviously. Yeah. I didn't understand when it would be bad. In the sense of, I thought oh, it's going to be difficult getting through the days when you're tired. But actually, I could get through a day on 4 hours sleep fine. Mm. Do you know what I mean? That's the amount of things you've done in my life before that, and since probably, on a hangover. You can function on a day with no sleep. I thought that would be the bad bit, but the bad bit was the night, the unending frustration of the night compared to, and that feeling that the world is asleep, but you are not asleep. I'd say that was the kind of, that for me was the most difficult, that unrelenting fear as you approach the evening that here we go again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of exacerbated knowing that you could be and should be asleep.
Yeah.
Like in the daytime, it's easier just to get on with it, isn't it? Being tired because everyone's awake. But yeah.
Yeah. Oh. It's that feeling of the night and the isolation. That's when you have your what have we done feeling that everyone has in the first 3 to 6 months, I think. Maybe longer. It was just an incredibly tough start. But, I mean, it's such a cliche. It's just so the best thing we've done in hindsight.
Yeah. I think the thing that is most underrated about having children is how entertaining they are. Like,
yeah.
They're better than television. They're so... I spend 90% of my time laughing at my children.
Yeah, it's great. And you just go, I taught her to ride a bike the other day. And you're like, this is brilliant.
Well,
this
is milestone parenting.
Oh, exactly. And milestone parenting is usually a bit... I think the thing with parenting is the best bit is often the bits that take you by surprise, or the bits that, yeah, you know, the first time they see snow actually is normally crap because they're freezing and they're crying or whatever, and you, yeah, just get a fight, yeah, with them with a snowman or whatever.
Yeah.
And but actually that was one of the first milestones where you're like, oh, believe the hype on this one.
Yeah.
That bit when she cycled off was incredible.
Wow.
And then she's just cycling around and around, and you don't have to run with her or anything. So I'm just sat in a park on a bench with a cup of tea, watching her cycle around and around. And you're like, this is as close to kind of a zen, a joyful moment in, yeah, my life, yeah, as I can get.
As you can get, yeah. I mean, you really have to spend a lot of time in parks when you have a pet, when you're, yeah, a parent of young children. Yeah. I found in lockdown, I found that incredibly difficult because they closed all the public toilets. I still, yeah, have PTSD from my kid just having to shit under trees in our local park. Oh. I'm honestly, Josh, everyone was at it because the kids needed to be in the park.
But it wasn't just kids. In Victoria Park, they closed the parks. And there'd be, this is kind of, Victoria Park's quite a kind of middle class park now.
Yeah.
And a sign of that is like, no toilets in there, but it's blazing hot Saturday or whatever. And there'd like be a bush, but with like a queue. Like they were just queuing.
Someone decided that was going to be the toilet. That bush. Yeah. Someone made that decision.
I don't know. I get you've got to close it, but I don't think this is as advantageous in the fight against COVID as the park thinks, in that we've just moved the pissing from...
Also, can I just say, as an Irish person, that is the most English thing I've ever heard. Any chance for a queue? Oh, we'll just queue behind those people because they're shitting behind a bush. So we'll... Should we do that? Yeah, let's queue. Incredible.
You've got to see that when you're the park ranger or whatever and go, yeah, do you know what? I don't think this policy is working for us.
Thank God that horrendous experience is over. No more bush pooing, please God. I really hope you have enjoyed this Changes Focus episode on parenting. You can still go and listen to all of these episodes in full wherever you get your podcasts. We're going to be back next week with a brand new, shiny, glossy series of Changes, which includes a mini series on bodies. Lots of your questions answered, and hopefully lots of conversations that you can really dig into and be moved by. Don't miss it. Subscribe now. It's so appreciated if you do. Click those stars on Spotify or Apple or wherever you're listening. It really, really does help enormously to share us around as well. Changes is produced by Louise Mason with assistant production from Anna DeWolf Evans. And we'll see you next week.